You're watching Notepad. I'm your host, Ibrahim Sani, broadcasting from the All Asia Broadcasting Centre here in Bukit Jalil. Towards the end of the year, we'd like to explore a little bit more about the industries of insurance as well as some of the elements within it. Joining us for this evening is James Ng, the Managing Director and Principal Officer of Munich Re Syndicate Labuan Limited. James, thanks for taking the time to speak with us. You reminded us of the conversation that we just had, not we just had, the conversation that we had 2 years ago. So it's very timely for us to have a chat again. How have you been keeping during the MCO?
I've been well, thank you, Ibrahim. And good to be back. Thanks for having me.
So are you in Labuan or are you in KL?
I am very much in KL.
Okay. So before we jump into all the other stuff, I just want to ask about your business. How has your business been operating during the MCO? And now that we're moving into the endemicity, how have things changed for the permanent element of it and perhaps just acclimatizing your business and your people back into the endemicity?
Well, that's quite a mouthful and quite a number of questions. Let me just tackle the first one. For our business, I think no doubt, COVID-19 has impacted us. We were quite fortunate with quarter one and quarter two results. We managed to do quite a number of new businesses, did some new launches of some products. So that's basically supported us in quarter one, quarter two. It was a good boost. Quarter three, naturally, we had the full impact of COVID-19 lockdown. So that's definitely dampened the business a little bit. But sufficiently, I would say that we should be on target for this year. And we are also very thankful to the industry and our business partners in giving us the opportunities of presenting new product offerings. At the end of the day, Muni Re Syndicate Labuan is a specialty reinsurer. So the whole part about our business is really coming up with new diversified, innovative insurance offerings to our insurance partners.
Yeah, so that's the idea, right? Because we always talk about insurance partners. Just very recently, we talked about, or I spoke to Liberty Insurance, for instance. But Munich Re is a little bit different. You're the insurers of the insurance. And there's always that element of new things right across the horizon. One item, of course, is cybersecurity. This has led to a lot of conversations into how people need to be improved on in terms of cybersecurity. I always read in the papers about unsuspecting individuals bombing Zoom calls. My children, yep, for instance, suffered from one such calls. It wasn't lewd or anything, but it was a random person coming into a group of school children's Google Classroom. Can you believe it? But this is just a highlight of the need for us to understand a little bit better about the cybersecurity issues. We've learned a little bit more about state actors coming into play and influencing, yep, the US election. That's the worst, I guess, at one end of the spectrum. And you have people photobombing or video bombing school children lessons and anywhere else in between. So I want to ask you about your thoughts on cybersecurity and what does Munich Re think about when it comes to talking to insurance partners in this realm of cybersecurity?
So if you look at it, the fact that you and I, we're not actually, 2 years ago, we were physically sitting next to one another and actually having this conversation. And at this present moment, we're obviously doing this virtually. So similarly with so many other industries, everybody's actually moved their business, a lot of their business operations into a digital platform, or rather they've evolved the way they communicate with their clients and customers to a virtual space. So needless to say, there's actually a heightened risk in terms of cybersecurity. And the one challenge that I see, and we actually see this quite often in the news, is ransomware, social engineering, where individuals are actually seeing identity thefts happening quite often. So from a reinsurance standpoint, what we are doing here is we are working with the insurance company in coming up with relevant products, which is what you just mentioned, the cyber insurance policy that could actually provide covers to the end users. And nowadays, you're seeing a lot of new product offerings in terms of cyber, where it's not just about the insurance product itself. We've got business partners that are actually coming up with hack busting. So they actually go and work with clients about how vulnerable their entire IT ecosystem is. They will come up with a list of recommendations. They'll work with trying to crack their firewalls. Once that is done, then they'll probably offer an antivirus and then the insurance products. And after that, then that's an insurance product for cyber is actually just one part of it. Then the other part is the after-event support. So in terms of insurance, cyber insurance cover, we actually provide legal advice. We provide the IT vendor support. And also, in the event if there was any reputational damages or potential issues with customer database where you need to inform clients about some potential issues that may arise, that's where the PR agency would come in. So all these are actually all provided as part of the cover under the cyber insurance policy.
There's also talk about the kind of elements of generations being involved here. You wanted to talk about a little bit more about the youth and how it's impacting the landscape right now. Talk us through that.
Okay, so interesting that you put it up, because I was part of the panel for this startup studio workshop where we try to provide advice or support to individuals or group of individuals and even startup companies that have ideas, or they've actually been running their business and they're trying to make it to the next level. So I was the advisor for the insurance element of it, and I was talking to multiple people. And one thing that I realized was actually a lot of these group of individuals or startup companies, they're actually coming from young millennials. And they're actually disrupting the way insurance is. As far as you can see, insurance has always been a very traditional product, pretty much quite technical. But when I speak to them, the ideas that they're bringing forth, it's brilliant. And they're literally trying to simplify the entire insurance cycle to ensure that the general public actually understands what insurance is. Now, I want to ask you, Ibrahim.
Yeah.
Have you ever in your life thought of being an insurance going to insurance as a career?
No, never, and still exactly. Still not. I'm sorry, James, but no. But,
no problem.
I hold nothing against the industry, but I cannot imagine myself being in this space because the actuary element of it, the legal documentation of it, it doesn't appeal to me.
Correct. And I think even if you ask me 20 years ago, I'd say that I probably wouldn't have been the ideal choice. But I'm glad that I stuck with it. But nowadays, you see the young millennials, they're actually opting to come to the insurance industry and actually make a difference. And these are massive disruptions that they are coming out, the ideas that they're bringing in. It's not just about the just, you hear a lot of jargons about insurtechs, the way they are distributing it from a digital platform. But that's only one aspect. When I speak to these young millennials during the startup studio workshops, they're coming on with so many ideas. I mean, it's just even from an internal way of how insurance processes their insurance products or develop insurance products, the entire insurance cycle, they're trying to get involved and they're trying to break down the supply chain and make a huge difference. Now, it's easier said than done when you put it in words, but obviously it requires a lot of commitment from the people who's come up with the ideas, the relevant stakeholders, even companies like us who's trying to support these brilliant minds in coming up something different. So it's not something that you're going to see it in 12 months or 24 months, but definitely you're going to see it in the near future where there's going to be massive differences. And I like to say that the industry is going to be a little bit more sexier with all these new concepts.
Fantastic. James, we have to go for one short break. When we come back, we'll discuss a little bit more about directors and officers liability insurance. Welcome back to Notepad. I have with me on the line James Ng, the Managing Director and Principal Officer of Munich Re Syndicate Labuan Limited. James, let's talk a little bit more about DNO, Directors and Officers Liability Insurance. This is, of course, brought into light even further because of COVID-19. The kind of responsibilities that managers and executives from across the organization will execute, which somehow will impact not just the company, but the directors as well. The DNO element has always been around for some time. But again, just like cybersecurity, this has resurfaced. And this has now brought into further consideration, being talked about in Malaysian boardrooms all over town. To us through the D&O element right now. What must insurers think about, and what must the industry as at large think about this as well?
Okay, so I relate D&O, like you mentioned, it's always been around. It's just that it's not many people would understand. The general public may not be aware of what D&O covers, right? So what it essentially covers, it provides protection for the directors and officers in the event they are being personally sued by either their employees, vendors, competitors, investors for either allegedly wrongful acts or actual wrongful acts in managing the company. So in my opinion, one specific element under the D&O has really stand out or stood out during COVID. And that's because during this COVID crisis, what you would realize is there is companies are beginning to reevaluate their resource requirements. Maybe because activities has been impacted due to the lockdowns. I guess businesses may not be as robust as in the past. So as they evaluate, they may begin to let go some employees. And some of these employees may actually feel that they were unfairly dismissed, or for whatever reason, they may have felt that they were shortchanged. So they then decide to take up a legal suit against the company, the directors, and the officers as well. So there's one element under the directors and officers, which is the employee practices liability, short for EPL. That actually provides covers for the directors, officers, and also the company for any employment-related claims brought about by these employees towards the company.
Let's talk a little bit more about the trend moving forward, because we talked about cybersecurity. We're now talking about D&O. You touched on the youth, or at least Gen Z or millennials coming to the picture. It seems like this scene, the insurance scene, is going to be thought about and discussed a little bit more in the future, particularly in a post COVID-19 pandemic world. Do you feel that that's the case, or it's more of just riding on the trend right now?
I think it's going to be... Well, the pandemic will definitely have brought about a permanent permanent increase in demand for D&O cover. That's for sure. And because the product has now become so much more in people's mind, I guess the level of awareness is a lot more than in the past. So definitely there'll be a higher demand for it. In my opinion, I believe every organization should actually look at purchasing D&O cover, because you imagine if you were a director of a company and the company did not buy any form of D&O cover to protect its directors and officers, and suddenly one of your investors decides to sue you and the company, every legal fees, or even if there was actually a compensation, would be coming out from your own pocket. So I think it's quite important for companies to really consider buying D&O covers.
Yeah, sorry, I'm not a board director of any company, not just yet at least. So how does this work normally? Would a board director insist upon this by the shareholders? How do they go about this at a personal level? I'm talking about the individual director. Or is it like the company led by the executive push forward this and say, thanks for agreeing to be on the board. Here's the cover for you. How does that work?
Well, I'm pretty sure it's part of, in most companies, when they evaluate their risk factors, right? One of them is the exposure of the directors and the CEO towards if there was any legal issues. So one of the ideas is to always purchase a D&O cover. And if the company actually doesn't have one, I'm quite certain that most of the time the CEOs or the directors would have requested that they buy a cover, and they will also evaluate whether that cover is actually sufficient based on the activities of the company. I mean, you can imagine if you're running a billion-dollar annual turnover company, and if you were only to buy a million ringgit D&O cover, you would pretty much be certain that it's inadequate. because based on the level of activities you have, the exposure is definitely quite steep. So you would commonly reevaluate to see whether is your D&O coverage sufficient.
Right. James, we again have to go for one short break. When we come back, we'll talk more about Munich Re, Syndicate Labuan Limited. Welcome back. We're talking about Munich Re, Syndicate Labuan Limited. Joining us is their Managing Director and Principal Officer, James Ng. James, it's been a while since we last spoke, and of course, we've covered quite a bit in this conversation that we're having right now with you. But, you know, taking a step back, I just want to see how things are panning out in a pandemic. Every single business owner, every single business leader, I ask the same thing. You guys have your respective business continuity plan, your crisis management plan, but this is one hell of a of an event spanning across 2 years with no end in sight. And I have to admit, James, before we started this interview, I was just, you know, browsing through COVID Now website. Yeah, the numbers are very, very discouraging, and it doesn't seem to have an end. I just want to ask you, what's your take on all this? How do you think we can move forward from this? And, you know, that whole question of that hybrid office or full-on, you know, work from home, what does that mean to the industry of insurance? And, of course, you know, the knock-on effect from the dearth of office building premises to, you know, mobility to internet connectivity. So many things are going to change. Yeah. I just want to pick your brain on this. What's your view on this?
Okay. Before I answer that, I just want to give credit to my IT and my risk management team. When COVID hit and when we went on lockdown, I think they did a great job because we were prepared. I would say that Munich Syndicate Labuan, we were prepared. So when the day the government announced on the lockdown, immediately my team and I, everybody else in the office, we just packed our notebooks and started working from home. Of course, throughout the months after that, my IT team had upgraded our virtual conferencing capabilities in order to support a lot more virtual discussions with our partners, with our insurance companies, along with our regional and global offices. So kudos to the team. When it comes to hybrid working, it's something that we're also looking in for the office. And I'm pretty sure the insurance industry, when I speak to a number of our business partners as well, similarly with our my fellow peers, everybody is looking at hybrid working, and this is probably already practiced in some of the organizations even pre-COVID. They call it hot desking, but these days now we call it hybrid working, or you know, a blend of working from office and working from home. I mean, the capabilities that we've already embarked in already allows us to do that. And if it's working, I think there's no reason why we shouldn't continue it. When I speak to a lot of my team members, they actually seem to enjoy having that ability to work from home and also from the office. So yeah, I think it's something that we're probably going to be adopting, and I believe the industry players are also going to be practicing that a lot.
You know, James, there's also that element of how you guys are moving or approaching your business in 2022. Is the focus going to be like what we talked about, cybersecurity and D&O, or is it going to be something else altogether? What's the industry looking like in terms of outlook moving forward?
So for our business, earlier this year, we actually had gotten approval from the Labuan FSA for Ritakafu window facility. So we're actually the first syndicate under the Lloyd's platform in Labuan to have secured the Ritakafu window facility. And the whole intent is actually to work closely with our Takafu operator partners in, again, offering specialty insurance reinsurance product. So while we've done quite well in Malaysia, we're looking to expand that capability to other countries. Specifically, if I'm looking at it, we're looking at probably Brunei Indonesia, and Middle East for 2022. At the same time, yes, cybersecurity is something that we are definitely going forward in 2022. That's definitely a key area. From a global office point of view, we've done exceptionally well. So we definitely want to bring that capability over to Asia and Malaysia.
Yeah, let's lock in on that one first, the Takaful element. GCC, Indonesia, Brunei, and of course Malaysia is quite receptive towards Takaful products. But do you feel that there is still bright light or bright hope for the Takaful industry when it comes to re-Takaful per se?
Definitely. I mean, if I read it right, the Takaful industry perhaps has been a little bit underserved. That's my opinion. And when we embark on this new initiative, we started putting this into a concept probably about 1 year ago. And finally, when we got the approval, we actually did announce to the market. And surprisingly, we were very humbled by the level of traction we were getting from our Takaful operators. And not only that, we were also seeing quite a fair bit of opportunities coming on from other countries. Again, like I'm saying, you're talking about Indonesia and Brunei. So that basically gave us the idea of perhaps we should, once when we are full on ready, we should actually then start going to the other territories to work with the Takaful operators over at those countries.
Do you feel that the regulatory requirements are catching up with what the industry requires? Or do you feel that there's a lot of work that needs to be done when it comes to the regulators understanding the business a little bit more?
Could I ask, when you say regulators, does it mean in Malaysia or
in Malaysia. But of course, countries where you're trying to enter as well, including GCC and Indonesia and the likes.
Okay. If I was going to talk about regulators from an insurance industry standpoint, I'm not just confining it to Takaful. Let's start with Malaysia. The regulators have definitely done a great job providing the level of support, and you could see the maturity, how the industry has actually come about throughout the decades. And the companies have grown well. I mean, probably 20 years ago, premiums were nowhere near to what we see today. At this very days, you see companies over R1 billion. But in order for us to advance, my personal take is that we need to be the industry needs to be empowered to do a lot more in order to innovate and advance. I came back from Singapore probably about over 3 years ago. Things were a little bit different. There's still plenty of opportunity in Malaysia. And it's the same way I see in some of the other countries as well. There's plenty of opportunities to innovate, to actually bring about a massive change in the industry. And it will only benefit the consumers, whether it's the individuals or the corporates.
All right, thank you very much.
Once you empower... when you empower the industry to actually do and proceed with innovation.
One final thing, James. Do you feel that Malaysia has what it takes to push through? It's very trying times for not just the regular Malaysian, but many businesses as well. We've been tested nothing else right now. What would be some of the key elements that you think is going to help us go through and persevere through these very trying times for the most of us?
I think Malaysians are very resilient people. We've gone through a lot. And the fact that we are multiracial, we've banded together and we've overcome a lot of things. This is probably just going to be a blimp in our history. And when we look past it years from now, I think it's going to be one that we tell our grandchildren and say that we've experienced this and we've come up stronger than ever.
Thank you very much.
I've got full confidence. Yeah.
I think that whole feeling of optimism continues on with the most of us. But James, thank you very much. We have to draw this conversation to a close. That was James Ng, the Managing Director and Principal Officer of Munich Re Syndicate, Labuan Limited. If you've missed any part of this interview, just head on to astroawani.com. Look for Notepad over there. You can also look for Munich Re on all our website as well as on all our social sites. James, May I wish you, perhaps be the first person right now, may I wish you all the best in your anniversary in the new year. And of course, congratulations on having such a good business for this year.